Hello, once again. Welcome to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets this afternoon. Here to take your calls, our old buddy, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell, an extensive background in both conventional and more, holistic, modern techniques, Ron?
Complementary and alternative.
That's what I meant.
Veterinary
yes.
medicine.
You said it better than I could.
You got it.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now, I apologize if you've been calling. I gave the number at the beginning of the show. Our call screener is not here, but we now have one in place. One of our trusty interns is here, so call now, 800-348-2551. You can also check in at the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, on Facebook at facebook.com/wamcradio. Tweet us at wamcvoxpop, although tweeting, not necessarily to Dr. Scharf's liking, because you're very limited in what you can send as far as characters. He likes to get a good background, so calling always works. An email is fine as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Try to include as much information as you can. If you are sending your question in online, the name of your pet, the age, the sex, all that stuff, give us as much as you can. Well, Dr. Scharf, after that long preamble, only a couple minutes long, the show has begun. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thanks for asking, and... it's beautiful out there, a little humid, but it's always interesting to listen to the show that comes on before this, and to follow Barney Frank on the radio is pretty good.
So. Well, all right. So he was the opening act, and now you're the headliner. Let's go to the phones. Amy in Queensbury, you're on.
Hi, fellas. Good afternoon.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Dr. Sharp. I have a 3-year-old pit bull. She's very slender. She has short hair, and yesterday I noticed she has hard lumps under her skin that's like the size of pebbles. And I took, I pinched one between my index finger and my thumb, and it's not attached to a muscle. And I tried to part the hair and look to see if it might have been a bite or a puncture, and there's no sign of a scratch or a puncture wound. Do you know what these hard pebble-like bumps are?
No. I can't say that I do, Amy, but 3-year-old is pretty young. A lot of dogs get lumps and bumps, but it's more common in the older dogs. So
right.
What would happen to a 3-year-old? Hard to say. I think it was good that you checked for any kind of entry points, any kind of like they can get poked, they can get a splinter, a thorn, that kind of thing. Are these hard lumps in one area or are they spread out?
It's in one area, but some are bigger than others.
Hmm.
I counted a half a dozen of them, and they just appeared, like, out of nowhere.
Hard to say. If you were feeling around them, Amy, and didn't elicit any pain, then I doubt that they would be abscesses. Abscesses are what you would find if there were, say, a splinter or a thorn poking into the dog. But
I thought maybe a bee sting, but I didn't see any puncture or redness or anything.
I would put a needle into it, Amy. You know, they can get various things. They can get something called sterile pustular dermatitis, which it's like a pustule, but there's no bacteria that you could grow out of it. So it might need an antibiotic. It might need something different than that. It might be an allergic reaction. I mean, are you sure that they're not hives or something like that?
Right. Okay, so I should get a biopsy then.
Well, a needle would be something that's a little less invasive than a biopsy at first, but a biopsy would give you way more likelihood of a definitive diagnosis. So if
right.
they're small lumps and they're not attached to anything underneath, it would be a pretty straightforward and relatively inexpensive thing to do as far as surgeries go, Amy, and that would be your best bet of getting an answer.
All
absolutely.
Right. Amy, thanks
okay,
a lot
Dr.
for the call.
Sharp. Thank you.
Sure
okay.
thing.
Let's go to Noelle in Red Hook. Hi, you're on.
Hi, this is Noelle.
Hi, Noelle.
Am I in the right place? Okay.
Hi, Noelle.
Hi, doctor. My mother died 2 weeks ago, and I have her cat, and he's 10 years old. He's a very nice cat, but I have an 18-year-old cat that here, and she is very unhappy with this newcomer. I'm keeping them separate. I just came home yesterday, and the new cat, Riley, is in my son's room locked in, and Sissy's elsewhere, but they did, she got a glimpse of him today, and I thought she was just going to beat him up, so what do I do? Do I just keep them separate for a while?
Yes, I think that you have to. Unfortunately, there are two things going on, Noel. First is the chemistry between individuals. And it's similar to people. I mean, some people just don't get along, and some people do, and cats are really good at that kind of thing and deciding that this new cat is not to their liking, especially if you're talking an 18-year-old cat there.
Right.
They're kind of set in their ways, and they have their routine, and all of a sudden it's being shaken up. So I think it's excellent idea of you to keep them separate for now. The second thing, I would use this pheromone called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. Make sure you have enough of the cubic footage in your house, so to speak. If you're going to be getting the spray as opposed to the plug-in, then you just spray the areas that the cats would come into contact with. Whether or not it would do any good, I don't know, but you could take...
What does it do, that spray?
Who knows what pheromones do? I mean, it's... pheromones are chemical communication. Who knows what they're telling each other? Dogs sniff around the another dog's back end. They're not sniffing at the stool. They're sniffing at a pheromone also. And it's telling them something. I'd love to know what, but who knows?
But if I spray it, what is that going to do for my old girl, for Sissy?
Hope is that it would take away some of her discomfort. The hope is that it would take the edge off. That's all. And that, in combination with some other measures, in other words, the separation that gradually over the course of weeks or even months, you could start giving the newcomer, Riley, just a little more space. And then, you know, try to put something that has Riley's scent on it in with Sissy so that she can get a little acclimated to the smell. And just keep all available fingers crossed and hope that eventually that Sissy's...
And maybe he'll have to go to one of my sisters.
That. Yeah, that's the easy option.
That's what's good about having sisters.
I just got her from my older sister, yesterday, and he may have to make the rounds, there's three of us. So.
Well, good luck.
Because poor girl. Anyway, thank you very much.
Hey, Noel, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Leslie in Kingston. Leslie, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is regarding, I have three indoor cats. They never go outside at all. And what your opinion is on using such as Revolution or one of those systemic medications for fleas and ticks, since they never go outside. They've kind of given me a little scare saying, well, all it takes is one mosquito and your cat will get heartworm.
Right. Well, I happen to agree that it's the heartworm. It's the heartworm is the pertinent piece. The fleas and the ticks are not pertinent. If the cats are indoors and you never get a visitor, then it's virtually assured that they won't have those kinds of external passengers, so to speak, or parasites, really. But the heartworm is transmitted by mosquitoes, and mosquitoes get indoors, unlike ticks. And not out of the question, you could yourself bring a tick in, but the chances are pretty small that you bring a tick in that would then detach itself and then start parasitizing one of the animals. So the good thing about the Revolution, I use a couple different heartworm products for cats, but the Revolution is one of the three or four that I know of that... a study was done of heartworm in cats, Leslie, and of the 100 cats that had heartworm, there was about 30% that were indoor-only cats. And heartworm can kill a cat. So I do think that it is worthwhile, unless the cat's having some kind of bad reaction, which can happen occasionally. I personally agree with the person that told you that mosquitoes carry heartworm. Heartworm could be deadly for a cat.
Okay.
And can I have just one follow-up question?
Sure, go ahead.
Do you recommend using it year-round or only during mosquito season?
Mosquito season is fine, but the mosquito season is longer than a lot of people think. I think it used to be 8 or 9 months. I think in this area it's more like 10 or 11 months a year now.
Okay.
I've seen almost always mosquitoes in December. So you're talking January and February, the only months which are virtually mosquito-free, but not even that. I've occasionally seen mosquitoes in February as well.
All right.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, Leslie, thank you. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Ronnie, where are you calling from, Ronnie?
Oh, I'm calling from South Courtright.
Oh, how are you?
Delaware County. I'm fine. I'm so glad I got through. Thank you so much.
Sure.
My question for the doctor is, I took four kittens out of a barn last year with the mother cat, and I took really good care of them. I took them all for their shots and all of that. And I wind up, I still have two. But my one guy, he had an adverse reaction to the rabies shot. The day he got that shot was the last day he was ever able to run around and jump up with the other kittens. He really kind of missed kittenhood. And his jumping part, I always said his jumper was broken, but he also had like an upper respiratory congestion, and he was stayed off by, and he just wasn't as big. He didn't eat as much. To this day, well, he'll eat his cooked chicken. But in the meantime, he started recently, like when he was about a year old, he's 15 months old now, he started getting better. And now he can jump up a little bit, and he's much healthier all around. And he's very healthy. And I am reluctant to get him his rabies booster because he's an indoor cat. And I don't know what to do because I'd hate to have him. So my question is, have you ever heard of an adverse reaction to rabies shots?
I've absolutely heard of adverse reactions to rabies vaccines, Ronnie, but I've never heard of that one. Now, I don't know what kind of rabies your vet used, but most vets use a killed virus. Now, if there were a modified live virus, and rabies is a neurotrophic virus, so that's how it causes its sickness and death in animals as well as people, is by migrating along the nerve pathways. Okay, and they migrate till they reach the brain, and it's horrible. So, depending upon what kind of vaccine was used, I agree with you. I wouldn't. That circumstantial evidence does not prove that it was the rabies vaccine that caused it, but I would agree with you that, especially if these are indoor cats, it's not that they are immune to getting rabies. Bats get indoors.
Yeah. Sure.
And other animals that carry rabies. Any mammal can carry a rabies virus. So, but under those circumstances, I agree. I wouldn't give that cat a rabies vaccine again.
All right, Ronnie, we're going to take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf, more of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Agway, Millerton, Chatham, Clatrack, New York, and Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Offering pet supplies from bedding to flea and tick control, foods from Wellness, Blue Buffalo, Evo, Science Diet, Taste of the Wild, and Primal Raw Diet, agwayny.com. Four Seasons Natural Food Store and Cafe, Saratoga Springs, New York. Locally owned and operated since 1988. Open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 7 days a week. FourSeasonsNaturalFoods.com. Saratoga Health and Wellness, providing a 12-week weight loss program run by nutritionists and exercise physiologists, SaratogaHealthAndWellness.com. Field Goods, delivering local produce to community sites like the Sweater Venture, fresh foods from small farms, field-goods.com. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, featuring a new kitchen and bath design center, offering Starmark Cabinetry, Cambria, and more. True Value, start right, start here, Mario'sTrueValue.com. And Albany Pro Musica, presenting Pops Goes the Chorus, a cabaret-style concert with show tunes and popular songs June 7th and 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaker Meeting House, albanypromusica.org.
So the lockbox, yes, it's open, and you know the fun drive starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Now, some people love the fun drive. It's true, and I'm not just talking about Alan, but a lot of people like the fun drive. If you don't like the fun drive and you want the fun drive to end, you got a couple of hundred G's, pop it in at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. That's our lockbox. Everything we raise between now and Monday morning counts on day one. Now, we're up. This morning, we were at about 119, 120. That's a day right there on the drive. We can shorten this fund drive significantly by making our pledges online. It's secure, WAMC.org. Click on the lockbox, and we'll count it all on day one. Now, back to the Vox Pop program. Our producer, Patrick Donges, is here with things from the social media and whatnot. Go ahead.
Speaking of the web and the lockbox, we have some social media questions. Robert on Facebook asks, we returned from a trip on Saturday and our 9-year-old Labradoodle wouldn't stop drinking water upon our return for many days. Obviously, hot weather was not the reason. He was left in the care of neighbors in our house who he knew and knew well. Any ideas why he's so thirsty? Could it be a sign of some other underlying health issue?
It could be, when a dog drinks a lot of water, the sign of underlying health disease. But in the context of having returned from a long trip, I also know that some dogs drink more water as a stress response to something that's wigging them out.
Mm.
And mom and dad gone for I don't know how many days very easily qualify for something that could stress a dog out that's just used to their mom and dad or their family being around. So assuming that it stopped, assuming that it's not an endocrine problem like diabetes or Cushing's or a metabolic problem, kidneys or certain other diseases can cause dogs to drink more. But I'd say if it phased out like that, that it was probably just the dog was stressed.
Okay. And now, last question here. Patrick on Facebook asks, where can we get cat or dog food that is not of the 4D class? When I first heard about the USDA 4D classification in the 90s, I cannot believe that material considered a biological hazard could legally be sold as pet food. But the USDA documents confirm it online, and several major media outlets have covered it. It looks like all the brand name producers use the 4D class of meat in their pet products, and I'm unfamiliar
with
this.
Yeah, what
is
this 4D thing?
Oh, I vaguely remember that it's dead, diseased, two other D's, that none of which are good.
None
of which are the kinds of things that you want to consider.
Not delicious.
Attached to food as an adjective.
Yeah.
But it is true. I have heard that a lot of bad stuff is allowed to be put into pet food. The interesting thing about pet food, the whole industry started as an offshoot of a lot of your manufacturers that had side products that were being thrown out that they wanted to figure out, what can we do with this? And so, consequently, I'm going back, I don't know, maybe 80 years or 60 or 80 years ago, probably 60, 70 years, that they started thinking, boy, we have these spent whatever, sugar canes that we got the stuff out of. What do we do with this? Oh, it's fiber. Maybe we could mix it up into a kibble, you know? So the 4Ds, where do you find foods? I think that you have to go to stores and sources that have good reputations and just look at the labels. And the problem is, Patrick, that there are a lot of people in a very valiant effort to go for foods that are natural, foods that are organic, etc., may sacrifice quality control. There's a lot of, for example, a lot of fly-by-night companies that come along and want to capitalize on how healthy their food is, but they might not have done research on quality control and good nutrition because it costs too much to have the analysis done to prove their point.
Yeah.
So that a lot of claims are made, which are really marketing claims on the label of the food rather than medical claims. So I think that you need to pick and choose. You need to go to reputable stores, people that you trust, find foods that have good reputations. I give people a list of a half a dozen foods that I think do not have those 4D products. For all I know, I could be wrong, but there are some good products, one of which is Innova, but Innova and I think which is made by the Natura company itself had a recall about a month ago about that they found salmonella in there or some kind of bad thing. So nothing is going to be immune from finding bacteria. That happens in people food also. And it's not only meat or dairy products, but it's also vegetables sometimes.
Sure. That
are
was
found
my
to have really bad bugs. So ultimately, you can't be totally certain about the quality of the food you're getting, but Innova, Solid Gold, California Natural, Canaday, a lot of people are starting to use for a few years now Taste of the Wild. There's a lot of people that are going to raw foods, but they carry their own risk of food poisoning. So it's a bit of a minefield, Patrick, but I hope that that gives you a little guidance.
Very good.
And I was going to say that if in doubt, probably ask your vet good. Yeah. Okay.
Patrick Dungis, thank you very much. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Ray.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. It's Ann in Knox. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you're on.
Yes, I have a 12-year-old English Cocker Spaniel that was diagnosed with kennel cough last week, and she was sent home with doxycycline and torbitol as a cough suppressant.
Yes.
She's improved while the cough suppressant is in her system. As soon as it starts to wear off, she's coughing again. And I'm just wondering, how long is it before I should expect improvement? If it is kennel cough, or like, what else could it be if it's not kennel cough?
Okay, first of all, Anne, If it is kennel cough, that bug can last longer than any of us like. It could be in the system for 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
And because that kennel cough is a mixture of a bacterium and a virus, the body itself has got to fight the virus off. So it's good to put them on antibiotics, and plenty of vets do. I do, because at the very least, you want to prevent it from turning into a more serious chest problem. Mm-hmm. However, the body's got to fight that virus off itself, Anne, and that'll take, like I said, 2 to 3 weeks. What else could it be? Well, assuming it's a dry hack-like cough, like that kind of thing,
yep.
That's a bronchitis. And there are other things that can cause bronchitis, but I'll tell you one specific thing that is a new disease that I've been speaking to with my clients for a few years now, and only a few months ago did I finally get the vaccine for it, and it's called canine influenza virus. Mm-hmm.
CIV. I've heard of it.
Yes. Now, this is literally a new disease. It was just discovered in 2004, 2005 in these track dogs in Florida. It didn't take long to migrate up north to the metropolitan area, but until about half a year ago, I didn't hear of any cases in the Capital District, and I would ask my colleagues every year, has anyone seen it? Has anyone seen it? And finally, there was a piece in the Gazette about half a year ago that someone did see two cases. At that point, I started stocking the vaccine, and I start daily asking what my dog patients' exposure to other dogs is, because the ones that I recommend the vaccine for are those who are mixing it up with a whole lot of dogs on a regular basis, because it's the kennels, it's the shows, the agility trials, the dog parks, the playtime or doggy daycare type places,
yeah.
That are the risk. And is it absolutely necessary to have your dog protected against it? I wouldn't say it's absolutely necessary. I still think that we're early on in our region's exposure. But I do think that it's something to consider if your dog's going to be seeing other dogs. However, Anne, that kennel cough is very similar in appearance at first to the canine influenza virus. And that is one of the biggest problems, is because it could be not taken seriously enough. But basically, if the dog doesn't get better enough, and after 2 or 3 weeks, and then maybe they develop a snotty nose, and then they start developing systemic signs such as being off food or low energy, you're looking at almost definitely something that's either kennel cough gone wild, in other words, turning into a pneumonia, or a canine influenza virus to consider. That's something that needs hospitalization. Otherwise, there's a 6 to 8% mortality rate to the canine flu.
Okay, and this is an older dog, so
yeah.
I mean,
yes.
She has no other symptoms. She's eating, she's drinking, she's acting pretty normal,
good.
Except for when she's coughing.
That's standard for kennel cough. It shouldn't affect, as bad as the cough sounds, it shouldn't affect the appetite or the attitude.
Okay, and that'll go away eventually?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just concerned because it seems like it's not responding at all after a week of treatment.
A week is not enough. You're going to have to stick it out for another week or two, Ann.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot. We go to Harry in Albany. Harry, hi, you're on.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
I'm good. Thanks for asking. My question is actually just about if dogs would tend to not like overweight people. Myself, I am and have been overweight for most of my life, but recently I gained some more weight, and dogs now seem to hate me all the time and be very terrified of me. And I used to be beloved by all dogs when I was growing up and as of before that. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Harry, I've heard of dogs that have a cautious or a bad reaction to people with hats. I've heard of dogs that have a cautious or bad reaction to people with beards. This is the first time that
I don't have either.
Well, this is the first time I've ever heard of a dog having a cautious or bad reaction to someone who's overweight.
I'm not sure if it's, sorry to interrupt, I'm not sure if it's that exactly. I mean, it could be something else that they're detecting that, you know, change in my mood or whatnot. I was just wondering if.
The thought had crossed my mind, Harry, to tell you the truth, but I wasn't going to say it, that could your own attitude somehow be radiating in a way that the dogs are picking up on it? What I would suggest, if it's important to you, and I would imagine it's important enough for you to call here and wait online to get to the airwaves, is that you go to friends that have dogs who are nice dogs that you know that they can vouch for, and then just see how they are. I'm betting that there would not be a problem. I'm betting that this is just a fluke, and it's probably nothing for you to worry about.
No, don't get a complex.
It's certainly not a fluke. It's been pretty noticeable for a couple of years now since this has been a couple of years that I put on the weight.
Oh, boy. Have you tried a cat?
Cats are pretty much the same.
I agree.
Dogs are more responsive anyway.
I see.
Are you seeing something that's across the board, Harry, no matter what dog is? If you go to a friend's or a family member's house that has a dog, are you still getting the same reaction?
Kind of strange phenomenon. When I was younger, all dogs everywhere just loved me, even ones that were aggressive and people would try to warn me about. I'd say no. Let them out of the cage. I'll play with them. They're fine with me. And now, even kind and friendly dogs, you know, they'll see me and growl or run, be afraid.
So, what I would do, if it matters to you, Harry, is I would go, like I said before, to a person who's got a dog that they know they could vouch for. It doesn't have any complexes or anything like that. Number one, number two, I would not look at the dog. Okay, I'd place myself in a somewhat less conspicuous part of the room, okay? Have the person bring the dog in or let the dog out of a crate. Yeah. Maybe have a good treat in your hand, okay? Act real casual. Not only don't look at them, but just go about your business. Now, that dog might slowly come up and sniff you. Don't even take any notice of it, okay? And then after several minutes go by, you can raise your hand 3 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches with the palm down. Okay, let the dog sniff your hand and then work at it little bits by little bits. And I'm betting I'd be very surprised if you weren't able to have a perfectly fine and unthreatening relationship with dogs.
All right, Harry, be careful out there and let us know next month how
good
you
luck.
Did.
Good luck. Yeah, I want to hear about that.
It's not one of those like omen situations where, Damien, get away from the dog. Mike in Newburgh. Mike, you're on.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Mike.
I just have a quick question, hopefully. I have a 10-month-old yellow lab, great dog. He has normal bowel movements in the morning, and then kind of as we progress through the day, it seems, he gets looser stool. And I'm not sure if that's associated with food or how much water he's drinking or anything like that. I wonder if you had any ideas.
I have a lot of ideas, Mike, but I'll tell you, whenever you're talking about a 10-month-old dog, okay, the vast majority of diarrhea is going to be caused by what we delicately call dietary indiscretion. Okay, They're eating anything and everything. They're putting everything into their mouths. They consider it to be their job. That's how they relate to the world. They're not only carnivores, but they're young. And that's just what they do. So if you want to play the odds, it's that. If you want to think about other possibilities that it could be, you always want to check worms and parasites, internal parasites. So if you haven't done a stool specimen with your vet already, you should do that. And then beyond that, the dog is a little young to be having a bad reaction to food, but that's another possibility. You know, maybe they just don't get along with the food that you're offering. Try one that's either a different food or a lower fat food. See what happens, and try him on small amounts at a time instead of getting one or two large meals a day, and then see what happens. But if the problem continues and you've ruled out worms or you've wormed the dog prophylactically, and it still happens, then the next two steps would be an x-ray to make sure there's no foreign body in there, okay, that the dog hasn't ingested something it shouldn't. And lastly, there actually lately has been a fancy technology called polymerase chain reaction. It's PCR for short, in which you could take some of your dog's business, send it into the lab, and they could check it for the most important and significant infectious causes of diarrhea in dogs. You know, 6 or 8 different things, the big guns, so that you can make sure it's not one of those.
What are the big guns?
The big guns could be various, but it's mostly bacteria and viruses. It could be, I'd have to guess. It's been a while since I looked at what the 6 or 8 were. Probably salmonella is definitely on there.
So it's
there.
Basically bacteria and viruses.
Oh, yeah.
That's the main thing.
And Clostridium, people getting C. diff when they're immunocompromised or in chemotherapy. So Clostridium.
Yep.
Clostridium perfringens is a big one. That's the one that one of the subtypes can cause tetanus, I think. So, but there are other ones that cause diarrhea.
Yeah.
And then there, I don't know, there's Campylobacter. There's a few others.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's get another call in here before the break. And, yes, Joe in New Windsor is next by my calculation. Joe, is that you?
Yes.
You're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, I have two male cats, not related. The older one is that has the problem. Basically, right now, he's sitting next to me, and I have a cone on him, which if I take the cone off him, what he'll do is he'll start licking him his front paws, and then within 10 seconds, he's trying to bite all his fur off. I don't know if he's got an OCD over the years or what happened, but basically, he had like a thing around his muzzle. It looked like little black, I don't know what, somebody said acne, but he doesn't have any fleas. And he's like a dark gray and white cat, and he has this stuff around his mouth, so I thought maybe it's food residue, and I was washing his face every day, and I've tried so many things. 7 different vets. I spent over $1,000, and I have my own health problems, and so I'm not working. I can't really afford the vets anymore. I bought a pill shooter, so I tried giving him an antibiotic. Of course, he hated a pill shooter, but
okay.
I managed to get almost a week's worth down him. I don't think that did anything.
All right, so what do you think, Doc?
Well, if it's black spots and it's around the muzzle, cats do get the acne that you had mentioned, Joe, but... I've never seen a case of cat acne that was north of the chin. In other words, I've never seen it on the upper lips. I've only seen it on the chin and the lower lips. And even then, it usually is not a big problem. So I doubt that that has anything to do with the paws.
Okay.
Now, the paws, I'd wonder, is there any seasonal variation, Joe? Do you see it if you have that cone off the e-collar that the cat will lay off in certain times of year, but other times of year it goes at the paws?
Well, I don't think it's his paws. It's his whole body. And I had the cone off, and I used to think the cat just had a pink belly. I didn't realize until I had the cone on him that he has hair there, and all that hair grew back.
Oh.
He was licking all the hair off his belly.
Yeah.
And that's why he had a lot of hairballs. Well, he also has, in one ear, some brown stuff. So I thought mites. But a couple of the vets said, no, it's not mites. I even bought... mite drops. I was trying that, but it's just the one ear. And the other thing is,
I agree with you. I would think about mites because they can live outside the ear canal.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a plausible possibility.
So how do you get rid of mites?
Mites is pretty easy. I don't know how good the over-the-counter products are, but you're just using an insecticide, basically, to kill the mites, and you're doing it for a week, and that ought to be enough. Sometimes, if you want to be sure, you do it 1 week on, 1 week off, 1 week on, and some of them are once a day, some of them are twice a day. Even something like ivermectin is an injectable that could kill the mites. So it's not even something that you have to give by mouth. And ivermectin, although it's got potential side effects, which could be major if used correctly, that injection would be good for 2-3 weeks. So, it doesn't
but is that something he can do himself? He doesn't have a lot of money to go to the vet.
He can't give him an injection himself. But unfortunately, you spend all this money on diagnostics, Joe. But I wonder if a skin biopsy was done, because that would be probably as close to a definitive diagnosis as you can get. A little punch biopsy of the skin. But it would cost, it's a little anesthesia involved, so there's no doubt about it, and the lab charge. But I would treat for the mites. You have nothing to lose. And I would treat for fleas. Just use a flea product, because they could kill lice, they could kill fleas. And if there's any kind of external or ectoparasites going on, it could easily cause the cat to go at itself a lot. But it sounds to me like an allergic thing that we're talking about, Joe. It sounds like the cat's allergic, because in most animals, allergies equate with itchiness. And itchiness makes them go at themselves to the point that they can mutilate themselves. But the thing that you had mentioned offhandedly about OCD, it does happen in dogs. I mean, dogs will go at themselves obsessively, and they won't stop it until they get an antidepressant, like clomipramine. Cats, I'm not aware of cats having the same OCD, but It is very common for cats to lick on their underside so that they have a bald belly, and 90% of the time there are no skin lesions, but 5-10% of the time there could be some rashy stuff going on or an infection going on. So it's a hard thing to say, but if there were no skin lesions, Joe, I would think about allergies.
All right, Joe, we got to take a break here. We're way over time. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. A couple of free open lines. We hit the home stretch with Dr. Scharf coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop, thebowwowbathhouse.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more, honestweight.coop. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. Rhinebeck Equine Hospital, providing a team of equine specialists in medicine and surgery, open 24 hours, 365 days a year, for emergency services, rhinebeckequine.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org.
By the way, I'm told that we could probably, and as of this morning, this was the case, I'm not sure if it's actually true now, use a couple of more volunteers for our fun drive next week. If you're interested in volunteering, we are encouraged to call Michelle Battle, and that number is 800-323-9262. Ask for Michelle Battle, and she'll hook you up. Now, the phone number to call here, not to confuse you, this is Vox Pop. We have a phone line for you. It is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. One open line at the moment. We'll try to move it along here and get your question in. Here's a quick one, Doctor, from Facebook. Michelle on Facebook asks, I have a 5-year-old cat who has recently been coughing daily. In the past, he has coughed occasionally to produce hairballs, and who hasn't? But there have been no hairballs with this cough. There have been no other changes in personality, eating, or bathroom habits, but the cough has been persistent. He's a 100% indoor cat. Could it be allergies?
It could be anything, Michelle, but the most common thing that I would think about in an indoor cat that's coughing constantly is heartworm. Heartworm in cats is a lung disease. As opposed to in dogs, it's more of a heart disease. And hairballs can cause coughing, and because of that, a lot of people can't figure out if the cat is showing symptoms referable to the digestive tract or the respiratory tract. It's sometimes hard to tell between a cough and a vomiting in a cat. But I would definitely test that cat for heartworm. Is it the most likely thing? No. The most likely thing at this time of year is asthma. Mm. Asthma is real common in cats. It does cause a cough. It usually causes a wheeze. It can be very serious, and it can be easily managed. So I would look into the asthma first and the heartworm second.
All right. We go to the phones once again. It's Sue in Boston Spa. Sue, you're on.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if you'd be able to tell me again, because I walked in right at the end of the conversation on canine influenza virus. What are the symptoms of that?
So the symptoms, Sue, can mirror kennel cough, okay? So what that means is it's a dry cough. It's like a hacking. It's like a like that kind of thing. Sometimes the dog will bring something up. They'll bring up some phlegm, although more often they just swallow it. And it can look very dramatic in terms of the severity of the cough, but canine kennel cough is not something that's going to affect the animal's attitude or appetite. Whereas if it's canine influenza, then it'll quickly turn into a snotty nose and a pneumonia. And that's the point where if they're not hospitalized, given supportive care, IV fluids, et cetera, they could have a bad end. Not likely, but possible. As I said, it was 6 to 8% mortality rate It's something to watch out for, mostly because, not so much that it's common here, it's not, but because it's so similar looking to kennel cough, and a lot of people, when they think about kennel cough, they know, if they know anything, if they know a little about dogs, that it's not a big deal, other than how highly infectious and contagious it is. So vets and kennel owners freak out about the possibility of kennel cough, but individual dog owners usually don't. So I hope that helps you, Sue.
Good luck, Sue.
I have a greyhound from Florida, and she has a dry cough, but it hasn't progressed into anything beyond a dry cough.
How long?
That's why I asked. Since Christmas, I think she inhaled some small pieces of kibble. We had received, we had gotten another greyhound at that time, and I think she was competing to try to eat all of her food before the other
one
got to her dish. She's only six.
Okay. I would think of a bronchitis, Sue, not necessarily the flu. That wouldn't have lasted 4 months, and neither would kennel cough. So it's a bronchitis, most likely.
And how do you treat that?
Bronchitis can be treated with bronchodilators. Okay. Depending upon what kind of bronchitis, the kennel cough type bronchitis will more commonly be treated with the cough suppressant that the other caller mentioned, the Torbitrol or the Tussagon. So 4 months cough. You're looking at a chronic thing, and bronchitis would usually show up on an X-ray, Sue.
Okay.
Okay. All right, we'll do that next time we're in. Thank you. Good.
Thanks, Take Sue. Care. It's Kara's turn. Kara in Albany, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about my dog. She's a pug. She's a hermaphrodite, actually. She's very, very high-strung, and she used to be aggressive when she was a puppy. Her aggression has seemed now to change more to anxiety. And she spins in a circle and chases her tail. We had her on clomipramine for a little while, but it seemed to make the aggression worse. She's just been put on Prozac, and I don't see a huge difference.
How long has it been?
Since she's been on Prozac, about a month.
That's just the minimum time that it would take for you to see a change, Kara. It'll take 3 to 5 weeks. So I would give it another week or two minimum. And then you can increase the dose sometimes, depending upon what the dose is. You usually start with that stuff, the fluoxetine, which is generic Prozac, at a low end. And then depending upon how it goes, you can increase it. So I would give it another week or two before you draw any conclusions about the Prozac.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Doctor, are hermaphrodite pugs fairly common?
Oh, no. They're not common at all. Hermaphrodites are not common. I've heard of it in over a quarter century in practice. I've never actually seen one. No.
I'll be darned. Nathan in Clarksburg, Mass. You're on.
Hi. I'm calling because my dog used to have fleas. He doesn't have them anymore. We use just a sort of generic brand flea cure, and that seemed to do the job. But for whatever reason, he still keeps scratching, and it's, you know, like removing large patches of fur from his underside, and I just want to help him.
Okay, so how are you sure, Nathan? When were the fleas, and how are you sure that he doesn't have them anymore?
Well, part of it is because we inspect him. You know, we, you know, scour all of him trying to find anything and haven't. And also, we've moved to a place that doesn't have any carpeting. It's all hardwood floors, so there's really nowhere for the fleas to live.
Okay. Well, if you're right that there are no fleas, then I would think of a different allergy than a flea allergy. And the allergy at this time of year to think about first is an inhalant allergy, okay? Something that the animals are breathing in that are getting them real itchy. But if the whole distribution of these bald spots, Nathan, is on the underside, I'd also think about a contact dermatitis, something that the dog is coming into contact with that they're allergic to, and it's only showing up at the places of contact. So you would want to look into that as the number two possibility. But don't be so sure that the fleas are done, Nathan, because I'm telling you, not seeing them doesn't mean they're not there. And all it takes is one bite from a flea to trigger a full-blown flea allergy. So it's very possible to not see any evidence of fleas, and yet dog's got a flea allergy. So what you want to do is take a comb, take a flea comb. It's very small teeth. You rake it through the dog's coat many times, and then you separate the hairs and look for black dots. And I'm talking dots. They're smaller than periods. But you want to look for these black dots, and once in a while, it's a small curlicue. And you put him on a light-colored surface like a white formica. You put some water onto him, and you wait 2 minutes, okay? If you don't wait 2 minutes, it's like a watch pot never boils, okay? But it'll eventually turn reddish if it is flea dirt, okay? That's what you want to do to make sure that there are no fleas, or, you know, obviously take the dog to the vet, because rather than pursuing less likely possibilities, you might want to look at a more likely thing given the history.
Okay. Nathan, thank you very much. Let's go over to Sally in Averill Park. Sally, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hi, Dr. Scharf. Thank you, Sally, for taking my call.
Thank you,
I have a little Yorkshire Terrier poodle mix, and she's 5 years old. And I've been waiting for her to outgrow this licking thing. She licks, and if we hold her, she wants to lick us. And if she doesn't actually make contact, she just licks the air. And I wonder if there's any way to train her not to do it. It's a little bit of annoying for us when we want to just sit with her calmly.
Right. So what you do is whenever she licks you, you stop being with her.
Oh, okay.
If every time she licks, she finds herself alone and bored, she'll eventually, hopefully, get the idea, gee, doing that licking thing always ends up alone and bored. Maybe I should start looking at other ways to interact.
Hmm.
Just
okay.
Give it no good feedback, including your presence.
How long will that negative conditioning take to work?
Well, it's a five-year-old dog, so okay. It's going to take longer than if the dog was 5 months old when you did it.
Okay. Right. Sally, thanks a lot. Good luck. Let us know how you did.
Thanks. Good luck, Sally.
Thank you.
Bye. Let's go over to Paul in Flat Creek. Paul, you're on.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to go over just the end of life with cats and dogs, because I think we take care of our animals much more than we take care of our grandparents and our elders. And I think the cicadas can go far into solving world hunger in the fact that it's just protein.
Okay. Do you have a question for Dr. Scharf?
Yes. When I handled my end of life with my dog, Ozzy, that I had for 11 years, my companion, I didn't handle it right because I was afraid and there was a snowstorm, and I regret it for every since.
Oh. Okay.
So my question is, what is the better way to go about it?
I want to make sure I'm understanding your question, Paul. Are we talking about euthanasia?
I'm just talking about end of life, because it's going to happen.
I see. Well, that's a huge question. Unfortunately, we only have a couple of minutes left in the show, so, and I think that's probably a whole show, so we're going to have to hold off on that, and in the interest of moving the show along, and perhaps if we can tackle that at the beginning of a show, do that for the whole show.
Yeah, that's a good idea,
that
Paul.
Would be fun. John,
I wouldn't want to give you a short shrift by just condensing an answer into 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
It's much too big of a...
Yeah.
Well, let's press on, shall we? John in Vermont. John, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I have a two-year-old female cat that I adopted a few months back. And initially, when she got a checkup, I was down in Massachusetts with her. And they said she had some signs of Giardia cysts. And so I had some powder that I gave her for 10 days with her meals, and then 2 weeks later, and then their advice, I brought her back, and she the stool sample, and they said it was still there, and they wanted me to go through that again, plus have some stronger medication. Well, at that point, I had to come back up to Vermont, and I had a vet I use here look at her for just a checkup, and she, as opposed to the stool sample, put a Q-tip in her rear end and put something, looked at a microscope, and she said she didn't have it. Now, is there something different with those two? Could she, not have the Giardia that quick? And I do notice, though, since I've had her, that her stools, they're form, but very often they're kind of wet, but they are form. Should I have her looked at again?
Yes.
About Giardia?
I believe, John, that you can't just put a Q-tip on an anal area, put it on the microscope, and see Giardia. First of all, they're exceedingly small organisms.
I see.
Even with a microscope, they're hard to see, number one. Number two, they're not necessarily all there. And if I recall correctly, the best way to concentrate them would be something called a zinc sulfate, turbidity test with, you know, the centrifuge spinning the stool down, and that way you maximize the likelihood of finding them. But I do also know, John, that Giardia, which in people is called beaver fever, you're not supposed to drink from the streams when you're camping without boiling the water, they can be very resistant to being eliminated. And most people use metronidazole, but I'll tell you something. I read recently that Panacure, which is fenbendazole, is a more effective medication, but even the fenbendazole is only about, I don't know, 90% effective. It's not 100.
That
might be the powder that you were given with the food, because
it was a white powder, and I gave it for 10 days in a row. I gave her that, and then they had said when they got another stool sample that they wanted to repeat that, and then something stronger, either in a liquid or a pill.
Yeah.
John, we're out of time. We're out of time, buddy, but thanks a lot for the call. And thanks to everybody who called in. Wow, Dr. Scharf, this was a program. We had the beaver fever. We had hermaphrodite pugs.
Never had so many calls on a show.
Just a strength.
This is amazing. Amazing, Ray.
It was one for the books, I think. Thanks to everybody who called in. I'm sorry if you didn't make it through. We will do it again. You can always post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC radio. And Dr. Scharf may check in from time to time. And you never know. If you got a question, he sees it. Maybe he'll chime in and answer it. Anyway, thanks to everybody. It was a lot of fun. Very interesting program. Thanks to Zach Malloy for running the show. Brandon Holmes was our phone screener today, our producer, Patrick Donges. Support comes from Healthy Living Market and Cafe, an independently owned natural food market providing natural and organic foods. Now open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. HealthyLivingMarket.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Earth Angels Veterinary Hospital, Wappingers Falls, an integrative facility that combines conventional and holistic medicine for a 360-degree approach to veterinary care. EarthAngelsVet.com. And Washington County Tourism, announcing beach and music festival, museum tours, cello concert, arts, birding, wine, opera, and more, starting Saturday, June 1st through June 8th. WashingtonNYCounty.com. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. It's The Gardening Show. News is next.